Today's episode is brought to you by We the People. It's our job as American citizens to remain watchful of people trying to take our freedoms, take our power, and change the structure of our country. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. No soldier shall in time of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched, and the person or things to be seized. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to twice be put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. Thomas Jefferson. Title 18, Part 1, Chapter 115, 2381 of the U.S. Code states, "Whoever, owing allegiance to the United States, levies war against them or adheres to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort within the United States or elsewhere, is guilty of treason and shall suffer death, or be imprisoned not less than 5 years, and fined under this title not less than $10,000, and shall be incapable of holding any office under the United States." Today we get to talk to Congressman Eli Crane of Arizona's 2nd District. That's the district I live in, so he's my congressman. I realized very quickly that 30 minutes is not enough to get into all of the topics and say all the things I want to say. Not enough by a long shot. But I hope you enjoy the following dialogue between myself and Congressman Crane. If you have any questions, what would you ask your congressman? Send me an email at theallcastinbox@gmail.com with what you would ask your congressman. How's Congressman Crane, good. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Right on. Enjoying Washington, D.C. as much as you can?
Not really.
No. Yeah. Understandable. Well, we don't have a lot of time, so I'll just dive right into it.
Do it.
Welcome to the Allcast podcast, Congressman Eli Crane. You are a family man, an entrepreneur, a former Navy SEAL, and now a congressman serving District 2 of Arizona. Thank you for representing the people in your district as you have so far. We're very grateful for it. I've heard you say that we are in the fight for the heart and soul of this country, and I agree, and that's exactly why I'm here today. So some of our topics are going to be domestic enemies, election accountability, consolidation of law, fines versus treason, and then dependency on the legislative process hindering us essentially from justice. So when it comes to domestic enemies, we have most of our current issues are from within the nation. We see a lot of stuff going on like Alejandro Mayorkas, Adam Schiff, Joe Biden, Katie Hobbs, Adrian Fontes, Tony Fauci. The list goes on and on. These types of people are selling out our country from the inside, whether it's being bribed by special interest groups or lobbyists or the cartels or the Chinese Communist Party. But we haven't seen much accountability for these people. Additionally, with domestic enemies, we've seen a lot of stuff recently with the ATF, the FBI, the CIA, showing ghastly examples of taking liberties against the American people and taking liberties from the American people, which it's not even their place to do it, but they're doing their best at it. So We have non-governmental people in power, like Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, George Soros, Klaus Schwab, all these powerful people, some of them part of the Luciferian Brotherhood system. And we have the American people individually, who are a huge, it's a huge responsibility on us as individuals. We're one of our own biggest enemies because a lot of us have become complacent, nihilistic, and overburdened. And we don't give our time to politics a lot of the time. So we have enemies all over on the domestic front. What is the biggest enemy that you see in America?
No, you're right. With I think your focus and concern with the adversity and even enemies that we have right here within. I've talked about this a lot on the campaign trail, and we definitely have a totalitarian, socialistic, communistic, heavy influence in the country. But I think our biggest enemy, to be honest with you, is the complacency of the American people. And the reason I say that is because you mentioned a couple people. Let's start with Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, who I've had a chance to question myself. I'm on the Homeland Security Committee. You would think that that would be an individual that we could start by holding accountable by impeaching him, basically firing him, from his job. We don't have enough Republicans up here that are willing to impeach Secretary Mayorkas. And so the reason I say complacency of the American people, because I think if the American people were actually engaged in paying attention, they would fire representatives that would not, help us hold some of these individuals accountable. And they would hopefully send representatives up here that would stand with us in holding some of these bureaucrats accountable.
So ultimately, it boils down to local voting.
Yeah. So, I've said this a thousand times. One of the dichotomies of having a country that's of, by, and for the people, it's great in that the people have the power, right? The problem is when those people are checked out and they're so focused on their Netflix, their fast food, their vacations, they don't know who their congressman is. They couldn't tell you who their senators are. They don't know who, they don't know who their city council is. They don't know who's on the school board. Often that creates a vacuum that is filled then by individuals that don't represent them, their ideology, or what, quite frankly, what's best for the people here.
Yeah, definitely. And by not paying attention, you're essentially relinquishing that power being by, for, and of the people. And like you said, it's a vacuum that's going to be filled by somebody. And if it's not us, it's, going to be somebody who seeks to take advantage of us. We'll move into consolidation of law. And most people don't have the time or the knowledge of legal jargon to keep up with all the new policies and laws that are constantly being presented and made. Police officers are required, all law enforcement officials are required to keep current on what laws are changed so that they can enforce them properly. But one job of Congress is to introduce legislation, regardless of where it's written, I recently learned. But how much of Congress's job is it to remove legislation that either doesn't apply or doesn't serve the people or is out of line with the Constitution?
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, that's been one of my focuses up here is to get rid of programs and acts. And in this, the case of this week, emergencies, like we're the free individuals of the Freedom Caucus are launching an initiative this week to get rid of five national emergencies in five different countries. The legislation that I'm going to be sponsoring is the national emergency that we have in Iraq, dating back to 2003, that's supposed to be looked at biannually by Congress. So we're supposed to regularly be looking at this authorization. We're supposed to be given reports on where monies are being spent, which we don't get those reports. And so, to your point, not only is it our job to introduce legislation to represent, our voters and try and help with issues, but we're also supposed to be trying to remove harmful legislation. Like, I'll give you another example. When we did we were going through the debt ceiling battles, the bill that we passed out of the House, it got rid of the IRA Inflation Reduction Act money. So it pulled that back. It pulled back COVID-19 money that was hanging out there. I think it was like $40 or $50 billion, something like that. Then we rescinded the money for the 87,000 IRS agents, and on and on. And so you're right. It's not just important to continue to try and introduce new legislation that's going to make again represent our voters and push the America First agenda, but it's also important to be trying to rescind, cut, and dismantle poor legislation.
Mm-hmm. As far as the 87,000 IRS agents and the money for them, that money was actually pulled back, so it's no longer available to that cause?
No. So we passed a bill out of the House that would have done that. But then when McCarthy and Joe Biden went and, Chuck Schumer and made their debt ceiling deal that came through about a month ago, most of that was removed. And that's what happens a lot up here, especially when we don't control the Senate and we don't control the executive branch. A lot of this, the good stuff that we pass out of the House, gets stripped away. And another example of that will be in the bill that we passed last week, which is the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. We actually had some good stuff in there. Like we said that the military cannot pay for transgender surgery. The military cannot pay for abortion. We're removing a lot of the DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion stuff, but that stuff will all get stripped away in the Senate. And then, and this is par for the course again, when you have, when you don't control the majority of the, governance.
So at this point, all we can really do is pass it through the Congress and essentially submit a request to the other branches. And when we're not in control of them, we being the Republican Party, they get struck down essentially in almost all cases.
Yeah, I would say that a decent way to look at it is we play a lot of defense. We still go on offense. I would say the most rational way to look at it is the stuff that comes out of this town is still bad, but because we do have a Republican Congress, it's not as bad. And yeah. I know that's pretty disheartening, but that's the reality of the situation.
It is. And looking at this situation, I see the things like the child trafficking and essentially what's gender dysphoria and child abuse by submitting children to be able to, take these hormone blockers or whatever it is, mutilate their genitals. That's obviously child abuse. Anybody who looks at that rationally would agree that that's what it is. But we still have a government whose structure is in place to support something that still allows for that. So going to my next point, in Marbury versus Madison, Supreme Court Justice Marshall said it perfectly. A law repugnant to the Constitution is void. Right. So all the time, it seems like we have laws being passed and policies put in place that are repugnant to the Constitution. Yet we have to wait for the government to catch up with that reality.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you can see or think of that would help us to either speed up that process or to circumnavigate it altogether?
Well, what I can tell you is I think a lot of this starts pretty early. I'm probably as critical of my own party often as I am of the other party, because I feel like we've largely been asleep at the wheel. And I think a lot of our party, instead of actually being willing to fight real fights, caves when it's a real fight, and then comes back and fights or pretends that they're fighting on messaging bills and stuff like that. But the bottom line is this, You know, it's like I used to get upset with politicians all the time. I don't get as upset with politicians as I used to. And the reason is this is because every politician up here in this town is a reflection of the people that sent them here. And so that, and that's why I focused on complacency. And so because, you know, kids aren't being taught civics, they're not being taught history. By the time they're voting adults and can actually send a representative or a senator up here, they don't know the Constitution. They don't know the Bill of Rights. They don't know that our founding fathers wanted limited government. And they've been, you know, taught and even brainwashed into thinking that government is the answer for everything. And so the good idea fairy starts flying around, and it doesn't really matter if it, you know, to these people, if it's constitutional or not. And so I like organizations like Turning Point USA with Charlie Kirk. Those guys actually go into an institution that I think the Republican Party abandoned a long time ago, and that's education, right? They go into the colleges, but we need activism. And there's that saying that all politics is local, right? And, you know, so it's like, I've seen you a couple times out on the campaign trail. You're somebody that engages. You're somebody that goes to events. That's the type of thing that's important. But I can tell you this right now, I'm a brand new into this whole world, but I can tell you right now, after being in it for 2 years campaigning and then up here for 7 months, the vast majority of the people that come to events that I show up to are probably, the vast majority of them are over 50 years old. And so, you know, it just goes to show you that we do have a deficit in what not only our kids are learning, but a deficit in, you know, what age groups are actually participating in local politics, and that affects who gets sent up here, and therefore that affects what comes out of here.
Definitely. With election accountability, everybody in the country heard about the Trump-Russia hoax, the 2020 stolen election, all that stuff. Everybody in Arizona has heard about the extreme and unsettling issues of our falsely elected governor, the details surrounding Maricopa County. And if you watch the court proceedings, it's remarkably obvious how all that went down. But the security of our elections needs to change. And what do you believe that we can do to beef up our election integrity?
Well, you know, if we go back to this constitution that we keep talking about, state elections are run at the state level, and I'm a federal representative. That being said, I have talked about my concerns with Arizona's elections, and quite frankly, that of the entire country. And the reason for that is because I've seen many things that raise concern for me. But I also understand that, you know, some of the ideologies that I talked about earlier on in the podcast, communism, Marxism, socialism, totalitarianism, a lot of the people that are behind the agendas at the local, state, and even federal level, it's all about power. It's about one word to them, power. And so that's what they want. That's what they want at the end of the day. And so, you know, the means justify that. They're willing to do anything necessary to get that. And, but it's going to have to be something that is handled at the state level. It's going to have to be something that I think, you know, people, and here's the thing too. I think that a lot of people don't want to look at, I think that a lot of people don't want to even believe. To me, this is kind of like the child sex trafficking that's starting to, you know, blow up. I have friends that have been on, you know, working on this, and, you know, whether from the nonprofit side or the law enforcement side, they've been working on child sex trafficking for years, and they've been talking about it, but it never went mainstream. You know, when they talk about it, people are like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. I've never seen that happen. So therefore it's not a reality. And I think that there's a similar mentality when it comes to election integrity as well. And I think, one, people don't want to believe that things are that screwed up here, right? I don't think that people wanted to believe that the United States was the biggest consumer, you know, of the child exploitation industry, okay? Because once you cross that line and you actually believe that, you realize that we're in a lot more trouble culturally than you might have thought. And I think the same thing is true for elections. I don't think that a lot of people want to believe it, because if you start looking into it and you go into it with an open mind, sure, I think there are some things out there that are, you know, conspiratorial and nonsense, but I do think that there is some there and some things there that really are problematic and need to be tightened up for sure. But I don't think that people want to even believe that, you know, our elections could be compromised, because once you cross that line, how much better are we than a banana republic? You know, is this still a country that's of, by, and for the people? And I don't think that, you know, I think Americans are so complacent. And again, I talked about that earlier. They're so complacent. They don't want to take a look at some of these issues, you know, and we're this way as humans. We don't want to address, you know, some of the failures or the tough, hard issues in our life. We'll deal with that tomorrow. Right. Or we'll just completely ignore it. And I think there's some of that going on with our elections. And I'm glad to see with this movie, Sound of Freedom, coming out recently, that it's really, you know, shined a light on, you know, the child exploitation industry and how big of a deal. And you're starting to see people actually pay attention. It'll be interesting to see. But if you think about what actually broke the dam on that one, it was some folks in entertainment, right? And Andrew Breitbart said a long time ago, he said that politics is always downstream of culture. So, you know, maybe that's a sign or a cue, you know, for people who really, you know, want to shine a light on. And I know there have been movies and documentaries made about election integrity before, but they never really crossed that line into mainstream, right? And so, you know, we'll see how this works itself out. But I think that I don't think we're going to see a lot of changes in any of this stuff until the people of this country finally wake up.
Yeah. There's a lot of cognitive dissonance going on, unfortunately. And America used to be the moral standard of the world. That's kind of taken a turn. The last and most important thing that I have to talk about, I think, is accountability of power. You mentioned that these people do anything for power. How can we try to keep other human beings, just more of us, accountable for what they're doing? So going back to the domestic enemies, people often campaign on certain things, get into office, and do the opposite.
Yep.
For some reason, we allow it, probably going back to the complacency thing. Re-election is not a good enough incentive or a preventive measure to stop that. I think that the consequences should be more harsh. Instead of just being stripped from office, you know, you're doing things that are destroying people's lives. And Senator Alejandro Mayorkas is a great example of that, because his actions or lack of actions are destroying people's lives, literally killing people. Yet he's only being impeached. And my question to you is, why are people like him and Adam Schiff only being fined or impeached rather than tried for treason or something stronger?
Yeah. So I understand rationally what, you know, I understand the thought track that you're going down, but you know, it's like the old saying that we had in the military: crawl, walk, run. Okay. You can't run before you walk, and you can't walk before you learn to crawl. And so what I'm going to tell you and anybody that listens to this podcast, we can't even impeach Secretary Mayorkas. So, you know, talking about next steps is, I think, kind of futile at this point. Right now we can't even hold him to a basic standard of accountability. It's so easy to point at a politician and be like, hey, that guy's not doing this or doing that. But the American, we represent, each one of us up here in the House of Representatives represents close to about 750,000 people. You guys can fire me in about a year and a half if you so choose to do. And so my thing is, hey, if you want to see change, that change starts with you. You know, get an activism group going, get a group of people that meet together, you know, start getting involved. And until that happens, you know, you're not even going to see the crawl portion of that accountability. And I hate to say that. I know that's not I know it's disheartening to people, but I co-sponsored Andy Biggs's legislation to impeach Secretary Mayorkas as soon as I got here. And yet I still have Republican colleagues that aren't willing to do it. Right. And some of them have, you know, some of them have they all have their reasons for it. My point is if you can't get to the crawl point of accountability, you know, talking about, you know, walking or running, you know, to me doesn't make a lot of sense.
Of course. Now, from the American citizen, the average person's perspective, it's confusing. We look at the actions, compare it to the definition of treason, which actually I have it here. It's got a wide range of penalties, but according to Title 18, Part 1, 2381, it says, whoever owing allegiance to the United States levies war against them or adheres to their enemies, giving them aid. So these people are giving aid to the enemy. And it says they shall be imprisoned not less than 5 years and all this stuff. So when we look at it and we compare what they're doing to what the consequence normally is, what is the crawl part that you're referring to? And what's the walk part before we can get to actual justice according to our law in the United States?
Well, I think that the crawl part would be in this case, whether you're talking about Alejandro Mayorkas or even President Joe Biden, I think that the crawl part would be impeachment. And so if we can't even get, I think the goal has to be, you know, you get there first. But you also have to keep in mind that, you know, some of these escalatory measures that you're referring to would take the Department of Justice, right? And I think that we all know that the Department of Justice, you know, has a rot in it right now. And it's one of the many battles that we're fighting. And I'd be lying to you if I sat here and acted like a freshman in Congress who's been here for 7 months, if I have all the answers, because I don't. I'm learning every single day. And, you know, honestly, I could fill warehouses with the amount of stuff that I don't know. And I can tell you it feels overwhelming at times, but I'll also tell you that I'm up here away from my family the majority of the time because I wanted to try to do something about it. I wanted to try and make sure that my kids, you know, grow up with some semblance of the America that you and I did. And so, again, I know it sounds simplistic, but that's where it starts.
Right on. Well, thank you so much, Congressman Crane. I appreciate you coming on here with me, and I'd love to talk to you again sometime.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. Love the shirt.
Right on. Jocko.
That's right. Later, brother.